It's time to review the tape, but we're going to have one of the Colts stars from Sunday help us out. We'll get to all that and much more on today's episode of Locked On Colts. Let's get to it.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How are you doing, Colts fans? Thanks so much for tuning in and making us your number one listen of the day. This is your daily podcast covering your Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs, which helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/LockedOnNFL. I am Jake Arthur, joined by my guy Zach Hicks here. You know the two of us from horseshoehuddle.com. We got a good one today. Today we're going to review the tape of the Colts-Texans 2020 tie, and Jonathan Taylor is going to tell us more about it. We spoke with the NFL's reigning rushing king about his partnership with Campbell's Chunky Soup, as well as how it actually helped inspire him when he was a kid watching NFL stars out in Jersey. Plus, he's going to tell us how things went down in Houston, what the offense is like now with Matt Ryan. You know, same play caller, but new quarterback. Things are different. And then what the Colts need to do in Jacksonville to actually escape with a win for the first time since 2014. I won't mess with you guys any more on this one. Let's go ahead and get to the interview. All right, Colts fans, we've got Colts All-Pro running back Jonathan Taylor for you today. And we're here thanks to the good people at Campbell's. Thanks for joining us, Jonathan.
No, thank you. I appreciate you guys taking the time out today.
Yeah, of course. Same to you. And these guys were nice enough to hook us up with your go-to soup, the spicy steak and potato. It's pretty good, man. I tried some earlier.
I'm trying to tell you, the new spicy steak and potato is actually one of my new favorites. Before, I was a big spicy chicken noodle guy, which is also very good, but then I had the spicy steak and potato, and I think that just went up. I don't know how they keep one-upping everything that they do, but Campbell's Chunky continues to one-up every single flavor. I believe it's the new Chipotle adobo in there. I think that's what just gives it that little kick. Okay. That's just perfect. It's not too much. It's not too light. It's just perfect, but spicy steak and potato is definitely my number one right now, 100%.
I'm there with you. I'm not big on real spicy. I can't always handle it, but it was good. I was able to get that going. That was nice. Now, not all endorsements are created equal. Being a spokesperson for Campbell's Chunky Soup is a big deal. I mean, I remember these commercials when I was a kid. You've had some other Hall of Fame running backs before you on this. You know, Terrell Davis, Jerome Bettis, LaDainian Tomlinson. What does that mean to you to be someone who's viewed as worthy of being a spokesperson for this brand?
Man, it's humbling. And I actually spoke about this to a couple people. My very first interaction with the Campbell's Chunky commercial was actually with Donovan McNabb. So for me being from South Jersey, being an Eagles fan growing up, being a kid, I'm eating Campbell's Chunky, but I see Donovan McNabb eating Campbell's Chunky. It almost made me feel like I was an adult, you know, like Donovan McNabb eats Campbell's Chunky. Like, I mean, grown-up food. So it, just to be able to be mentioned with those guys, to be in a position that those men were in, it's humbling because Campbell's Chunky entrusted me to continue to add on to their legacy and continue on their work. And I'm just so proud to be partnered with Campbell's Chunky.
Absolutely. That's really cool. And it's obviously a testament to what you've been able to do on the field. This is year three for you with the Colts after an incredible first couple of years. You already got the party started last Sunday. You're right there near the top of the charts and rushing it with 161. You guys, of course, tied with the Texans 20-20. While it's not a loss, it's also not a win. How does this one feel now, just a couple days later?
Like you mentioned, that was kind of the conversation that I had with a few players was it's not a loss, but it's not a win, you know, especially my first time being in a tie. So just asking guys, you know, what does that mean? How does that affect us? And I got an example that last year the Steelers entered the playoffs due to a tie. So I'm guessing in some cases it can be beneficial, but then, of course, I guess in some cases it can be detrimental. So it's kind of something that we won't know until later on down the line. You always wish that you just came away with the flat-out win, so you don't have to worry about that. So I think the best thing for us is to lock in and prepare for this week in order to come out with a win to make sure we have a W in that column.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you guys are thinking about it, it's your best start in, you know, almost a decade. So, you know, we got a glass half full there. But talking about your game in general, you know, I'm a big nerd when it comes to just running scheme and preference and stuff like that. And Frank Reich, I think, does an amazing job with how he utilizes so many different types of running styles, power runs, zone runs, gap runs. I mean, everything. Were you kind of prepared to come into such a diverse running scheme from Wisconsin, or did it take kind of a little bit for you to get kind of used to this offense?
I was definitely prepared. I will say, especially towards my final year at Wisconsin, we started to do a lot. We did pretty much a lot of the same things, but we started to add in a lot more wrinkles my last year at Wisconsin. But I know primarily we ran a lot of gap scheme in college, but now coming here to Indianapolis, it's actually made me a better back now to be able to run a multitude of different schemes efficiently. So just being in this system, I'm actually excited because now no matter what we may have, no matter what run scheme we may have, I feel comfortable. I feel great running the scheme. So it's actually a great place for me to be in order to develop as a player.
Absolutely. Yeah,
now we're talking about the scheme. The team's nucleus is largely the same. A lot of you guys have been there for 3-4 years, but there's still plenty of newness. There's some new marquee players there. Frank Reich is still calling the plays, but how do you see the offense evolving throughout the year now with a new quarterback in Matt Ryan, who's so cerebral and studies so much?
Like you mentioned, it's funny you mentioned that. I was just talking to someone about how cerebral Matt Ryan was. I mean, everything is so methodical and so detailed. So when him, Coach Frank, Marcus, everyone is in that meeting and they're planning and preparing each and every single week, Matt is so in tune to, hey, maybe I've played this team before. I've had success running these three schemes or these kind of concepts. And Coach, they're working together and collaborating so much so that Matt is able to go out there and be completely comfortable. And it's up to us. It's on us as an offense to make sure that we execute. If Matt's comfortable, he's able to go out there, place the ball exactly where it needs to be, get us in the call, whether it be a run or a pass. And I just think that having that dynamic when you have a quarterback, I mean, similar to Phillip Rivers, when you have a quarterback who's played so much ball, I mean, they're able to get us in the correct call that we need to be in. Then it's on us to execute.
Yeah. Yeah. And talking about some of your teammates here, you know, when you talk about the Colts running back group, it's not just you, you know, there's another really prominent player and that's Nyheim Hines. And you guys always seem to mesh really well, just both on the field and off the field. But how has that relationship with Nyheim been for you these last couple of years in the NFL?
Oh, it's been awesome, especially my first year. Nyheim, as well as Jordan, Marlon, they were all so receptive to answering any questions that I may have had. I mean, I learned everything virtually, a whole new system virtually. And, you know, of course, I'm bound to have questions coming in when it's finally time to put things on action on the field. But Nyheim has been a tremendous help. And then when we have him on the field, especially at the same time, I got to make sure I stay locked in and focused, because a lot of times I'm on my assignment and I'm looking over, peeking, trying to see what he's doing. Because I know the play may be coming to him. If the play is coming to him, he may do something amazing, and I don't want to miss it. So a lot of times when we're on the field at the same time, I have to try and find myself to refocus. But he's a dynamic player, and he's also helped me grow as a player, being a running back in this league. So he's just been a huge help.
Love it. Yeah, having you both back there, and wherever you're lined up, slot, outside, backfield, wherever, it's obviously a good idea to have you guys both out there at once. And you know that, you know, taking competition lightly in the NFL is no longer a thing. You guys have been on the right and wrong end of it. And Jacksonville isn't considered a juggernaut by any means, but you guys know how serious that can be, especially in Jacksonville. The Colts haven't won there since week 3 of 2014. You play there every year. What can you guys do against Jacksonville this week to take care of business, especially since your last game against them was two regular season games ago? What's What's something you can change up to kind of change the narrative there?
Well, number one, we definitely have to go out there and start fast, but we also have to kind of have that killer instinct, you know, no matter, similar to this past game, if we're down, you still have to have that killer instinct. You still have to be able to have your foot on the gas pedal, and then vice versa. If you're up two or three touchdowns, you still have to have the killer instinct. We know this is the NFL. Anything can happen in any possession. So you have to make sure no matter you're up or down, everybody is on their P's and Q's. There cannot be any slightest chance of relaxation at all in the NFL, because any given Sunday, we know what can happen. So it's on us. It's on us as a team to make sure that, one, we get a great week of prep, and then two, when it's time to actually go and execute on Sunday, that we remember every single rep we had in practice so that we're able to replicate that on Sunday.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Guys, I think that's all we got for this. JT, I want to thank you again for jumping on with us. JT is up for FedEx Ground Player of the Week award this week, everyone. So make sure you get over to NFL.com and vote for our guy. But thanks again, Jonathan, for your time. And thanks for the suit, man. It's the first ever gift I've gotten from a player. So I'm pretty pumped about that.
No, thank you guys so much. I appreciate you guys taking the time out. I hope you enjoy the soup. Just a little gift. Just please enjoy it. Every single bite, please.
Will do.
Of course, we appreciate you. Thanks again so much to Jonathan Taylor for his time, and congrats to him on his partnership with Campbell's. It's actually a pretty big deal considering some of the people who came before him, just a long list of Hall of Famers. You know, Jonathan's job seems pretty safe with the Colts, but the same can't be said for everyone. As you gear up for fall, you need the right people on your team to help your small business fire on all cylinders. LinkedIn Jobs is here to make it easier to find the people you want to talk to faster and for free. Create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 810 million people, which seems impossible, but it's not. Then add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring so your network can help you find the right people to hire. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and expertise so you can quickly prioritize who you would like to actually interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Did you know every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNFL. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNFL to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Guys, I know you've heard us talk all about home field by now. They're an apparel brand based out of here in Indy that recently partnered with the Colts on this awesome new six-piece collection. There's a hoodie, a crew neck, a jacket, a pair of joggers, and two t-shirts. We wear this stuff all the time since they sent it to us. And honestly, it feels like wearing a big old hug at all times. And
yes,
honestly, my wife is jealous of my new gear. So I'm probably going to have to go on there and buy some new stuff. And let me tell you guys how you can get it for cheaper. The collection's been out for a few weeks now, and you don't want to wait any longer. New customers can get 15% off their first purchase from Homefield with code LOCKEDONCOLTS at checkout at homefieldapparel.com. All right, Zach. So this episode each week is always going to be your specialty. It's the grinding the tape episode. We're going to get you guys into the offensive side of the ball from Sunday's game here in a second. But first, there was some Colts news that dropped literally right before we started recording. So we'll get you caught up on all that. If you listened to yesterday's show, you heard us talk about Rodrigo Blankenship. We devoted a whole segment to it. The Colts did waive him today. You know, he had some mistakes on Sunday, but it was just kind of the tip of the iceberg. It was the latest and kind of a downward spiral for him. The Colts felt they needed to move on, so they did so. They replaced him. They added a couple guys on the practice squad. Chase McLaughlin, who is a familiar face. He was here in 2019 into 2020. And then Lucas Haversick. He was here as a rookie minicamp tryout this spring. He's an undrafted rookie this year, so we really don't know anything about him. From what I read up on him, big leg, iffy accuracy, which is kind of the same thing with McLaughlin. So literally the polar opposite of Blankenship.
If you're gonna have iffy accuracy, you might as well just have the big leg as well. That's kind of what the Colts are probably thinking here. Like, hey, with Blankenship, we were already getting the iffy accuracy. Yeah. Let's just get a big leg in there instead.
Yeah, give you a chance from 60 yards out. I think if I remember, McLaughlin's career long is like 57 yards or something. But so the Colts, they had some other corresponding moves. They elevated cornerback Tony Brown to the active roster, which they did last weekend as well, but now being during the week, I think this is a permanent one. They also signed cornerback Daryl Baker Jr., safety Henry Black, and a pair of kickers to the practice squad. So they had to release some guys from the practice squad. That was guard Arlington Hambright, safety Will Redmond, and cornerback Chris Wilcox. Probably won't devote much time to all that. We'll see how any of that goes. We'll go ahead and let Zach get into the tape here. Let's just start from the top. After your rewatch, what did you see from Matt Ryan? Was it more impressive than we initially thought, or what was your first impression of his regular season debut?
I thought it was a really strong game overall. I wouldn't go as far to say, like, you know, obviously the numbers are gaudy, you know, the 352 passing yards, that looks awesome. I do think a lot of that was because they were trailing for a lot of the second half, but I do think it was a really strong game overall. There were some miscues. I don't know what's going on with that QB center exchange, and I have no clue who to blame it on. It's so weird. It's the weirdest thing ever. Obviously, there were some cadence things. There was like a handoff to Jonathan Taylor where they were just not on the same page in the first half. There was the interception on the screen. So there were some sloppy elements to this game, and Matt Ryan was at the center of some of those. But I do think overall, Matt Ryan played a really strong game. Even in the first couple quarters when the Colts weren't scoring like they were in the fourth quarter, he was moving the ball quite a bit. It's just, again, the sloppiness kind of derailed those couple plays. But I think he made some big-time throws. I really love how he operated against this Texans. I don't want to call the Texans like a cover two defense, but they did do a lot of zone defense. And Matt Ryan was very comfortable hitting those dig routes in the middle of the zone between the safeties and linebackers. Did a really good job looking off the linebacker, looking off the safeties, and staying in the pocket. And he had big gains to Pittman Jr., Doolin. I think Strawn had one on a dig route down the field. So I really do think Matt Ryan played really strong. You know, I think after the game, I said I'll give him like a C for this, just because, you know, in the reaction after the game didn't feel great. But I would say after film review, I'd probably give him a B or a B plus for this game. I think it was a strong game from him, and he was definitely one of the players that came to play for this, like some of the other guys we're going to talk about.
It was literally one of the most bizarre performances I've seen, because it's like, normally if a guy is making those kind of mistakes, the whole game, or like him throughout the game, just seems so off. But he never seemed off. It just seemed like he was making those really weird mistakes. Like, you just don't see a 15-year guy doing that. Let's move on to skill position, guys. Jonathan Taylor, 161 yards. I think Naheem had 6 catches as well. What did you see from the skill position players?
Yeah, I feel good about the 2 starting running backs. I'd probably want to see a little bit more of Naheem Hines in the ground game. Just you know, Jonathan Taylor getting 31 carries is something we don't want to see every single week. Obviously, this game plan was a little different. They were trailing. You want to get the ball in your star players' hands. So I get the abundance of carries, but you would like to see Naheem Hines used a little bit more, but I did think both players played really well. Naheem Hines had a couple really nice catches. The one and the other was one from the slot on the linebacker, had a really nice catch. Made some things happen on a screen play in the second quarter, I think. So Naheem Hines played well, and then obviously Jonathan Taylor was a star of the game for the Colts. So I can't say anything negative about him. Even when you watch the film, you could see just how good he looked. I mean, he was patient, he was quick, he was fast, he was strong. I mean, he's just a superstar, and he played like a superstar on Sunday.
Yeah, I like how you said he would have been like 5th or 6th in the NFL in rushing so far, yards after contact.
Right.
Which is exactly how it was last year.
I will say that number was a tad disingenuous, because Barkley would actually be 5th in the NFL still in yards after contact as well. So Jonathan Taylor is 2nd right now in the NFL in yards after contact. But it didn't fit my narrative, so I had to leave that out of the tweets. But no, Jonathan Taylor had a great – over 100 yards after contact, if you guys didn't see my tweet on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Pass catchers, receivers, tight ends. I know there were some ups and downs there. Obviously, Michael Pittman Jr. was a stud.
Yeah, I didn't really have too many issues with the pass catchers. I mean, again, Alec Pierce, that drop, you don't want to see that. Doolin could have made that deep catch, but again, the ball's a little more inside. I think it's a little easier for him. But again, you want to see him come down with that. Maybe the one in the end zone, too, that you could make an argument that he should have caught that. Kylan Granson had a couple that he probably should have brought down. So I do think there were some things to clean up from the pass catchers, but I mean, Michael Pittman Jr. looks like a bona fide superstar. He looked smooth. He looked quick. He looked strong. Everything timing wise was perfect. I mean, him and Matt Ryan have such a great chemistry. And I thought that him and Carson Wentz had a lot of good chemistry last year, but this looks like it's at a different level. So I'm really excited about what I saw from Pittman Jr. I think Paris Campbell and Ashton Doolin did a couple little things that were pretty good, but I do want to see them take the next step. But the one I really want to point out that I just want to see him out there more is Mike Strong. I mean,
yeah,
Mike Strong looked good. I know it was 11 snaps, but on those two catches, he looked smooth. He looked quick. He looked confident. And he made those catches look really easy. So I think this next week, I do want to see Strong snaps maybe climb up from like 11 to in the 20 somewhere. You know, like when you have obvious passing situations, I think I want him out there. I think he played really well. I think of all the skill position players, that's the guy that I want to see get more snaps going forward.
Yeah, at the very least, I'd love to see him in a red zone package. I think Matt Ryan could find him on a fade easily. Offensive line, that's definitely one of the groups we talked about right after the game. What did you see after watching again?
Slightly more optimistic than what I was after the game, but still where you want to be. Yeah, still not where you want to be, though. Like, I do think the offensive line started to clean it up a little bit down the stretch of that game, just like the whole team did. Braden Smith still had his issues throughout the whole game, and you want to see him correct that. But I do think the interior offensive line, Pinter had his ups and downs, but the interior offensive line played pretty well. Ryan Kelly looked a lot better in the second half than he did in the first half, looked really good in the run game in the second half. And honestly, Matt Pryor was fine for the most part. I really didn't have many issues at all with Matt Pryor in this one. I think Quentin Nelson had, I think he had one bad pressure that he gave up, but he looked really good as well. So, you know, I do think they have some issues up front, some communication issues, some things that are going to need some ironing out. But right now, the biggest thing for me is, like, can Braden Smith just level out his play? Because he was the weakest link, I think, on Sunday off of you. And I just want to see that ironed out a little bit.
Yeah, I saw a really thought-provoking tweet earlier about him moving back into guard. I forget who posted it. It was interesting, probably a topic for a different day, but you've got Bernard Raimann out there getting snaps too. Does the galaxy brain, do you want to mess with getting into that? I mean, again, topic for a different day.
But could you imagine paying your starting guards like $38 million a year?
Oh, for the love of God, no.
I don't know. I think I'm firmly against moving Braden Smith. I would not bet on him getting moved to the inside. But guys, if you are into betting, betonline.net is your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. And all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including this year's opening week's games. BetOnline is also your continued source for all your sport wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and even golf. Despite the tie and being on the road this week, the Colts are actually 4-point favorites this Sunday against the Jaguars in Jacksonville, too, according to BetOnline. Head to the website or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline. The game starts. All right, getting into the defense. I guess I'll just start off by saying, you know, we'll just go position again. I think the defensive ends were okay. Like, not great, but
yeah.
I think they were okay. I would like to see them get a little bit better in the run game. I think Yannick Ngakoue struggled a lot in the run game. I think Pro Football Focus also made a big note of that.
Which is to be expected from him, right, to be honest.
Right. I think Quiddy Pay was fine in the run game, but you would like to see a little bit more. Now, his energy was awesome in the run game. He made a lot of tackles, but you want to see him be a little sturdier. It was in the pass rush department that, again, I think it was like just below average, which you don't want. You want this to jump up to above average or really good. That's what you brought in all these guys for. But Yannick Ngakoue couldn't really do anything against Tunsil. And Quiddy Pay didn't really show up until late in the game. I think the biggest thing for me is I want to see more Dio and Tyquan Lewis out there. Let's get more of a rotation going. I know Gus Bradley mentioned that in his press conference today, but I want to see more rotation. Dio, I think he had like five snaps and he had a pressure in those five snaps. So
I was shocked at how few he had been Banigou snaps basically. I was like, wow, I was surprised.
Yeah, no, I want to see Dio out there a bit because, again, at the end of the day, he's just so ferocious that even if he's not getting it done, he's just going to be he's going to be a force in there. So I want to see more rotation. I want to see more production from Yannick Ngakoue. But I do think this upcoming week we will see a little bit more from him with a better matchup and against his former team that he hasn't played against yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, shoot, that's what you hope for. The rotation in general, I mean, maybe playing fewer snaps will help them to not be so gassed. Right. And I feel like Houston played kind of heavy throughout that game too, kind of a power approach. So we'll see how things change. I think Jacksonville is a much different team. So that would definitely be to the benefit. Defensive tackle-wise, again, there's not much to talk about outside of DeForest Buckner and Grover Stewart because really no one else played.
Yeah. I would have liked to see a little bit more from Buckner rushing the passer, but I think he was fine. Like, there was no real issues there with Buckner. He still looked like Buckner for majority of the game, was good in run defense, was fine in the passing game. But again, you want to see more. But Grover Stewart was a superstar. Grover Stewart is so, so good. Just so powerful, so agile, so quick. And in this scheme, it just works better for him because he can just get upfield in such a hurry. And if he's one-on-one, I mean, he's going to just overwhelm whoever's trying to block him one-on-one. So I do think Grover Stewart is in for a career year this year. And you could tell it. You could just tell watching this first game. It's like, this is a different Grover Stewart. It kind of reminds me of how when he came into camp and then started the season in 2019 after his rookie year, it was like, okay, this is – or I think – yeah, 2019 after his rookie year. Yeah, he came in and just looked like a completely different player, like weight-wise and how quick he was. It looks like he's kind of doing that again this year at another level because he was already really good the last couple seasons. It looks like he's even taken that to another level. So I really think Grover Stewart deserves to be mentioned among the NFL's elites when it comes to one techs and zero techs. I think he is one of the best run defenders in football.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I was just about to say, I think this is probably fine. As long as the Colts have some success, I think this is the year people start to recognize Stewart a little more. Maybe if he's able to put up more stats, that will catch people's eyes often because he hasn't been a box score guy previously, really, at all. Moving back behind those guys to linebacker, I know kind of the biggest issue we saw initially was the spacing and not chasing tight ends up the seam and things like that. And, you know, with single high safety, he's supposed to be the last line of defense, not the only defense. So was there any change to what you saw from there?
Straight disaster. Straight disaster.
That's not what we hope for because it's been those guys all summer. Like Shaq Leonard hasn't been out there at all. It's been those guys the whole time.
Yep. Yeah, it was bad. It was really bad. And honestly, we'll talk about when we get to safeties as well. It was really anyone when it came to matching vertically in the slot or matching vertically at tight end or matching vertically in 12 personnel, you know, the two tight end sets and stuff like that. Like, these guys were just struggling, and they were struggling to diagnose routes behind them. And honestly, like, don't get me wrong, I understand that there's going to be some issues with that because when they played with Matt Eberflus, it didn't happen very often where they had to diagnose what was going on behind them. Bobby Okereke did it a little bit, but there was not like none of these linebackers had to really understand what was going behind them. It's just get your landmark and watch what's in front of you and attack in front of you. With Gus Bradley, linebackers have to have eyes in the back of their head. That's part of the entire. You know, the way this scheme works, it's how you take away these vertical routes. But I saw way too often on film, you know, guys were struggling to robot to get back to crossers behind them and stuff like that. I mean, on Quiddy Pay's first sack in overtime, Davis Mills, if he were a better quarterback and could have slid a little bit out of there, that should have been like a 30-yard gain because Zaire Franklin and EJ Speed just did not get back to their landmarks. That's one thing that when you go against Pat Mahomes in week three, or maybe even Trevor Lawrence here in week two, that's going to be a huge gain against you. You know,
Don't say that.
But then you get to the seam route. I mean, the tight ends up that you're literally having nobody carry these tight ends up the seam, and you're putting your free safety in a really bad bind. I mean, on the second touchdown, Bobby Okereke just did not pick up that alert at all. Like he did not move with his tight end. That was clearly his man. If you look at across the board, this was clearly cover three match. And you had the slot corner carrying his guy vertical. You had the outside corner carrying his guy vertical. Everyone was carrying their vertical routes. But Bobby Okereke just did not turn and run with him. And I don't know where the miscommunication came in there, but it just didn't work. And as a result, the Texans scored. And again, it's one thing for this to be week one against the Texans, but when you get to week two, another divisional game, you can't just be giving up the seams like that. When you play Pat Mahomes in week three, if you're doing these things and you're having these mistakes, he's gonna drop 60 on you. Like he did it against the Cardinals here in week one. He dropped over 40 without even breaking a sweat. So
there's a difference between journeyman OJ Howard and all world Travis Kelce. That'll be a big problem.
Right. So they absolutely need to figure this out. I'm not pushing the panic button yet. But right now, these linebackers are concerning me, and I do think they need to kick it in the gear pretty soon, because again, they have some tough opponents coming up in games that they can't afford to drop, and you can't be allowing offenses to go up and down the field when you play against better quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. Now, so it sounds to me like a lot of the issues in coverage kind of stemmed from, at least with the big plays, kind of stemmed from the linebackers. Did they do better than you thought initially? I mean, I know we both thought Stephon Gilmore was pretty good. Julian Blackman, you know, he bit hard on that flea flicker, but that was maybe the only egregious thing that we saw from him.
Yeah, Blackman could have been better. I do think he missed a couple tackles, but honestly, I think it was like a missed tackle on a screenplay that I was more upset with than any other play that he made in the game. Mm-hmm. So I don't think his game was that bad, and I do think, you know, like Pro Football Focus was a little rough on his overall grade and stuff this week, especially because I think they said the first touchdown allowed was on him, and I vehemently disagree with that. I don't think it was his fault whatsoever. So I do think the secondary played better than I remember. I mean, Kenny Moore needs to step up his play. He allowed just way too many receptions. And obviously the two defensive pass interference calls were a little tough, like little weak, but you can't put yourself in position to get called on those. So he needs to bounce back, but Stephon Gilmore I thought was awesome. Nick Cross was fine. He had a couple miscues on seam routes as well, but I think he was fine. And Brandon Faison was like an inch away from a couple pass breakups. You want to see him make those plays, but I think he was okay overall too. So I'm not too concerned about the secondary right now. My biggest concerns right now are linebacker. And I don't know if Shaquille Leonard stepping in to, again, this new scheme that he didn't really practice all offseason. I don't know if that's going to fix his just putting him out there. So, again, my panic level with this defense is kind of high, and it's mostly because of linebackers right now.
Yeah, well, it doesn't get much easier on Sunday against a guy in Trevor Lawrence who absolutely shredded them in Week 18. So, on that note, I think that is all for us today, everyone. Check in with us tomorrow as we cross over with Tony Wiggins of the Locked On Jaguars podcast. We're going to chat all about this upcoming game. He's going to tell us about the Jaguars and what the Colts should be worried about that we didn't already just discuss.
Yep, and be sure to follow us on social media at Jake Arthur NFL on Twitter, at Zach Hicks 2 on Twitter, and at Locked On Colts on Twitter. Also subscribe to the show on YouTube. I think we're at like 1,200 subscribers, so keep bumping those numbers up. It's been awesome. And wherever you guys listen to your podcast, rate, reviews, and subscribe. We love all the comments, and we try to get to them as much as we can, but please keep leaving the comments. And thanks again for making Locked On Colts your first listen every day. Now make your second listen the Peacock and Williamson NFL Show. Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson give you the expert NFL analysis in less than 30 minutes. It's free and available wherever you get your podcast. We will see you guys tomorrow.